101.7 is Truth. Happy Monday, Milwaukee. It's your girl, Jazz Tyler. You are officially tapped in. I hope y'all had an amazing weekend. Shout out to the city. Shout out to Alderwoman Cogs and the entire Brownsville team. Brownsville Festival yesterday was amazing. Some amazing performances. Shout out to Wavy Boy and the gang. My students at Howard Fuller, Dr. Howard Fuller Collegiate Academy, all three of my students who performed on the youth stage managed to win the competition, first, second, and third place. First performances ever. It was amazing. It was amazing. So, again, shout out to everybody who came through. Listen, today is a special day. Today we are talking about the voice of Milwaukee, Homer Blow, the legend Homer Blow, his legacy, leadership, and what's next. We are honoring a man whose voice has been a part of Milwaukee for more than three decades. Whether you grew up listening to him, met him at a community event, or took your children to his birthday bash, chances are Homer Blow has impacted your life in some way. And we want to hear from you. We want to hear what comes to your mind when you hear the name Homer Blow. What memory comes to your mind? 833-212-1017. Thank you for joining me today, Homer.
Absolutely. It is my honor and pleasure to be here with you. I'm tapping in.
Yes, it's amazing. I was just saying off air 16 years ago, I sat down at Homer's Blow Radio, and he was interviewing me. And now 16 years later, I'm interviewing you.
Hashtag that part, hashtag facts.
That's a full circle.
That's it. Full circle. The revolving, you know what I mean? And evolving into.
Yes.
So I'm pleased and honored to be with you. I've always been pleased watching your growth, you know. So, and the thing is, you know, you can impart a lot of information on people.
Yeah.
But it's what they do with it that
yes.
means the most.
Yes.
So do you take that information and utilize it and continue to grow, or do you, I don't know what they talking about. I ain't got to do this. And all of the information that I was blessed to try to impart on you, I saw you take all of that information and watch you grow.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing about me is I like to see people grow. So I'm not one of those people that are just going to be like, oh, no. And you better every time you do something, you
yeah.
every time. No. If I can watch you blossom
yes.
into who you are now and all of the great things that you've been doing and are continuing to do, then, you know, that's enough for me. That's enough for me. It's just like when people say, how do you do your birthday party for your kids and give all them kids toys and it's your birthday? The smiles on those kids' faces,
yes.
that's my present.
Yes. You don't make me cry. No, but I do appreciate you, and I say it all the time, but it's different when I'm sitting across from you. There's a lot of things you have taught me and said to me throughout the years, but the conversation right before I took off music-wise, that conversation was the most important because it was regarding my attitude, it was regarding my yeah. behavior, and you're like, you gonna go to jail like Remy Ma?
That part.
You know? So that changed my life. That changed my outlook on life. Everything that you have done has put me or said has put me into a position to win when I implemented it. So the advice that you've given me the first time when I seen it work is like, yeah,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you have to keep doing it. You know,
Absolutely.
You have to. So I truly, truly thank you. I say it all the time. I don't know if I'd be here if it wasn't for your support, for the mentorship, for the guidance. And now we get to do it at radio.
That part. And again, like I say, I'm proud of you every thing that you do, and just because of knowing your journey,
yes.
you know what I'm saying? Like, and I believe I was listening to one show where you were sharing your journey, and just to see you, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Continue to work through all of the adversities that, you know, some people would have been like, you know what, I can't do this.
Yeah.
Cause I got to take care of this. I got to take care of that. I got to take care of my health. I got to, you know, and it's like a setback after setback, but the never give up.
Yep.
You get what I'm saying? And that's why you're still here. That's why you're still relative. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're relevant. Like, a lot of times people have to ask, like, whatever happened to, whatever happened to, but we've never had to ask that about you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And you were able to also follow something I said, just don't be one-dimensional.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Don't be one-dimensional, because you can be one-dimensional, and then when that dimension don't work no more.
Yep. It's a wrap.
It's over.
It's a wrap.
Like, what do we do now? Like Forrest Gump running.
Yeah.
And then he stopped. You know, everybody was following him, and then he just stopped running. And they're like, well, what do we do now?
Where are we going?
Yeah. So, yeah. So, but, yeah. So, like I say, I continue to be proud of the people that really listen and to think about it, like even with – you know, we're all working together as a team. Ray Nitti.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Just think about the guidance that I gave Ray Nitti, you know, and like, man, listen, you better go on and get this labeled, and you better get your seals on this music and get it signed up with BDS and Nielsen. Just get everything. I was like, come on, get it there so you can start getting them royalty checks.
Yep.
And, you know, he followed that. And when he was bringing me some music and it wasn't right yet, I'm like,
this ain't it.
This ain't it. This ain't it.
This is not it.
Yeah. So yeah, that's just a part of who I'm blessed to be.
Yeah.
With trying to help people. If I can try to help in whatever areas, and if I'm not knowledgeable enough in those areas, I'm not afraid to say, you know what? I'm going to pass you to this person
because
they deal with this.
Yeah.
I can, you know, I can take you this far.
Mm-hmm.
But now with what where you're trying to go, these are some of the people that you're going to need to trust now. And I'm not going to just send you to somebody that I think is going to mess you over or anything like that. Like, they have had to earn my respect as well.
Yep.
You know
I'm a witness. We sat in on Blow Radio with Joker. Shout out to Sterling Odom and Smalls, Joseph Jackson. And from there, Homer introduced me to them. They became mentors. They introduced me to Zaytoven, and I took off.
There it is.
Took off.
And ain't stopped.
Ain't stopped. Yeah. I truly, truly appreciate you, Homer, and I'm grateful to have you in my life. You have such an amazing heart, such an amazing anointing, and there's not one person in this city who has been successful, especially in the entertainment business, who doesn't have a Homer Blow story, right?
Yeah.
And I know you get your accolades and things of that nature, but in today's world, where a lot of the new generation tends to not recognize the ones that come before them, we have to continue to display the accolades.
Right.
And continue to display the love so that they can understand how it started, why it started, and that it needs to be done.
Yeah. You know, and I think that is one of the big divides in the Milwaukee entertainment music business now, even when it comes to DJs. You know, oftentimes it's not always that maybe a person is jealous of the new generation of DJs that are coming, because we know it evolves. There were people that came before me.
Yeah.
There were people who are, you know, doing things now. There are people who will come after I'm no longer here.
Yeah.
But the thing that I try to impart upon some of the new DJs, again, y'all got it a lot easier than we had it. You know, we his brothers right now, I'm blessed that I'm not one of them. They have black injuries, and you know what I'm saying? They messed up and carrying them crates.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man.
Them knees.
And so that's why we had those people that they wanted to get in the club or wherever we was at.
Yeah.
I carry your crates. No problem. Good looking. All right. Just be here at the end, too. I got you. That's a small price to pay.
Yeah.
Hey, with me, you see him with the dolly rolling these crates in or carrying them one at a time and, you know, learning your setup and doing that. But with some of the new DJs, I think that unfortunately, not all of them, but some of them, they refuse to just go black and learn the history.
Yes.
I feel like if you get into any realm, you got to learn what you're getting into. You know what I mean? You got to be like, what is this? What is, why do they talk about the art of and mixologists and this, that, and the other? And yes, it's made a lot simpler with controllers.
Right.
But again, you got to think that the people that gave them the information to put into that controller were actual DJs.
Yes.
That were cutting and making these scratches. So they knew they used DJs to continue to evolve these controllers. So it's like, yeah, learn what it is. You know, I know, what is a album? What is wax? I don't know nothing about that. Go learn about that. You get what I'm saying? So you'll know where this all evolved to. And it's like how some of the hip-hop artists, again, they don't go black to see why you even have a lane.
Come on now.
To do this. You get what I'm saying? So Nicki and whoever else, I don't care what level you may get now, because yeah, black then, a lot of artists weren't getting paid what some of these artists can get paid now.
Yep.
But if it wasn't for Lil' Kim saying, you know what, I'm doing me, and I'm going to make this risque, but I'm going to make it sexy at the same time, you know, it wouldn't have been a door open for a lot of these other new lady MCs and rappers. So I just wish more would learn about what a DJ really is and learn about the techniques. Sure, you don't have to use it, but I studied my radio history, like, this person, oh, that person.
Yes.
And I gave them their respect. So I came in being me.
Yep.
But you can learn something from everybody. So you can take a little piece of this, a little piece of that, a little piece of that.
Yes.
And then create you.
Absolutely. You heard it right from the horse's mouth. We got mouth. We got Homer blowing the builder. Do not touch that dial. 833-212. We want to hear from you. When we come back, we are going to dig into Homer. The radio history, the community work, all of the above. It's your girl Jazz Tyler, 101.7 The Truth. It's your girl Jazz Tyler. We are live and direct. Happy Monday, Milwaukee is going down. We got the legendary Homer Blow in the building again. Thank you, Homer, so much for joining us.
Absolutely.
We know that you have done many of things in Milwaukee. You have been in radio for over
35 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there are some things that, you know, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at why you're so embedded in the community, when we look at why you have such a big heart, why you're always willing to help the people, especially in the entertainment business, because those who are, we know that the information is not privy all the time.
Right.
Like, people will gatekeep information, but you've never done that. I want to dig into how you grew up, where you grew up. Before we do that, we do have a caller on the line. Patrick, are you there?
Yes, I am. How y'all doing?
Bless.
Thank you for tapping in. You got a Homer Blow story you want to share?
Yeah, just overall the pleasure it's been over the years. I remember Homer Blow. I remember Commander McGee used to always try to say your name. Always got a kick out of that. And I'm a little older now. I used to, you know, do all the nightclubs and the bars, and every time I knew Blow was going to be there, I knew it was going to be a good time. So I can't even name some of the bars and clubs I used to go to. A lot of them are long gone now. But all the years you spent on 860, and one of my favorite shows was the Avenue Love Train.
Yes,
and Brother
sir.
Brown used to do.
Yeah, featuring the love question.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt, man. Y'all had some good shows over there, good times, man. But I enjoyed you. Every time whether it was just a little hole-in-the-wall bar, if it was one of the big clubs like 414, all of them, man. Anytime we knew you was going to be there, we made sure our face was in the building. So I appreciate you, man, and keep it going.
Yeah, thank you, man. I humbly appreciate that. The list of establishments. And I started DJing in clubs when I was underage.
Yeah.
But I never. But see, here's the other thing. You got to understand this part, Brother Z and Paige. Like, listen, I never drank alcohol. So, you know, I being underage before starting to DJ in the club, I would sneak in the club, but I just wanted to dance. I didn't, you know what I mean? So if security came, I'm like, okay, let's move to the side. Where we got this generation now, they be trying to stand there with their bottles, knowing that they ain't supposed to be in there.
And don't want to dance.
And don't want to dance and stand on tables and all that kind of stuff. So it was like, no, I just came knowing that we could look at some of the women and be like, no, but she's too grown. I can't, yeah. You know, ain't nothing going to happen here. But yeah, so it was just about going. And then one of the things that as we kind of like dive into like the DJ part,
yeah.
Because I was sneaking in when I was underage, and the DJs were, in my opinion, they weren't interacting with the crowd.
Yeah.
Back then, a lot of the DJs were braggadocious about themselves.
Yeah.
So it was like, yeah, I'm this. Yeah, you listen to me. I'm this. But I'm like, okay, what about the crowd?
Yeah.
When y'all gonna interact with them? So I was like, okay, let me take some of that and add it to what I feel like we should be doing.
Yep.
You know, the party over here, I got in that and was, I'm like, party over here, and then got everybody engaged. And yeah. Like, hey, all the ladies over there, you know, I was, yeah. You know, that part. And yeah. I'm like, they weren't getting that. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to do that because I felt like, yeah, I felt like that. Yeah, that's an issue. Like, no, they should be interacting with yes. the people. So that's one of the things that made me like to interact with and entertain. Yes. You know, I felt like when you came out, you should also be able to be entertained. Yes, you're dancing, but be entertained while you're dancing and right. make it a whole entertainment experience. And that's just one of the things that I love to do. And I just continued to do it until I just continued to master it.
Yeah.
And it just became second nature to me.
I love, so I'm a nightlife baby. My mm-hmm. mom worked for Arliss for so many years. She worked at Siboney's and Main Event and mm-hmm. ARJ's and, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and my dad was my dad. So I got my first taste of the nightlife when she was at Siboney's mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. Main Event and got to go pick up her money. Now I'm a teenager rapping.
Right.
And I'm trying to sneak into ARJ's, but I can't. They like, yo mama, I'm about to call your mama. Mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I say all of that to say I understand the excitement of being a teenager underage in a bar or a club.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I'm looking around, nobody's performing, everybody's just, you know, it was the stage for me.
Right.
It's the stage. I see the stage and I'm like, I want to do that.
Right.
I want to take that over, and I want to get reactions from people and make them feel good. Mm-hmm. You know?
Absolutely.
So you grew up in Milwaukee. And
born and raised.
Tell us about your life, Homer. How did it start? Again, I know we had some conversations outside of off air, but there are some things that you have been through that a lot of people don't know that shaped you to be the person that you are. And once we get into it, they'll be able to, like I was, understand why you give back so much.
Mm-hmm.
Do you mind tapping into that?
Oh, absolutely not. It's something I always tell people that, you know, you never know how your truth and your story may help somebody else or let some other people who went through some things be like, wow.
Yeah.
I would have never knew that you went through this or you went through that. So, yeah, when I was 2 years old, and both of my mother and father are both deceased, and even that, you know, having the mother and father deceased and also four other immediate brothers and sisters deceased, my only two sisters deceased, having three of my brothers deceased. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So all of that. And still being able to do what I do. And yeah. It's like, what? You ain't went crazy. You ain't this. Yeah. You ain't that. But yeah, when I was just 2 years old, all right, again, born and raised, and that's why I can claim so many different sides. I grew up on the east side. I was mm-hmm. on Hubbard, yeah. off center.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up on 2nd Street, 2nd and Keith. Grew up on 14th and Keith.
Yeah.
Grew up on 27th and Locust. Grew up in West Lawn.
Yes.
So, you know, I ain't been everywhere except the South Side. I wasn't on the South Side. I didn't go to. But, yeah, so with all of that, but when I was 2 years old, my mother had just brought me in from going to church.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, a lot of this, you know, I was told from my mother that, you know, you had on a baby blue, you know, two-piece suit.
Yeah.
And I'm two.
Yeah.
And so we get home, and that's when people really respect it. All right, change from your church clothes to your outside clothes. Are you ready? Yeah, you want to get out them shoes and all that. So with that being the case, she had took me in the room and had laid me on the bed. And she was taking my clothes off to kind of change me or whatnot to put me into regular clothes or whatnot. So all of a sudden, there was a big commotion. And like I say, a lot of this part was, you know, shared with me because I'm two.
Yeah.
So I wasn't retaining that information like that. But she heard her mother in there because her mother was there. And she heard her mother arguing. And my father was abusive to my mother. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the ones like, you know, que solo, say your mom's in my business. You know, she's always in our business. So he came over there and her mother happened to be there, you know, obviously my grandmother. And he had charged her up like, you know, I told you to stay out of my business, stay out of my business. And she was rebellious like, you ain't doing this to my daughter. You ain't doing that. And I'll be in y'all business as long as I got to be in y'all business. But like I told you, I said, I'm tired of you. So he ended up pulling out a gun. Mm-hmm. So as my mother was in there changing me, you know, to, you know, get me into my regular clothes or whatnot, because I was out of church. So I'm, you know, taking things off like, okay, blam. And she hear them arguing and yelling. And her mother starts saying, shoot me. Shoot me. And so she ran in there and she jumped in front of my grandmother, which was her mother, and said, don't you shoot my mama. Don't you shoot my mama. And he was like, get out the way. Get out the way. Mm-hmm. And she was like, don't shoot my mama. Don't shoot my mama. But her mother was being like, no, like move, move, and tried to push my mother out the way. Mm-hmm. And my mother jumped right back in front of her. And as she jumped back in front of her mother, my grandmother, he unloaded his gun inside of her. So she was in the hospital for months, still had to live with a bullet lodged in her head that they couldn't remove, one right next to her heart that if they would have removed it, she would have died. But, you know, really messed her up, obviously. And so me and three of my other siblings, and it's nine of us in all, we had to go to foster home. So I was raised basically in a foster home. The first two foster homes, I was not sexually abused, but I was physically abused. So they all of, you know, the other people, there was a few other foster kids that they had. Mm-hmm. So they was like, they was tell the social worker when she would come by, because you have one if you're in a foster home. And they would say, like, she beat him all the time. Like, she wasn't beating the other kids, but for some reason she beat me. I'm two.
Yeah.
And she was beating me. And so they eventually moved me from that foster home into another foster home. And that woman was beating me too.
Yeah.
So then they moved me to my third foster home. And at that one, I ended up staying there until I was in my early teens.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. We are with Homer Blow. We are tapping into the life of Homer Blow. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that with us. When we come back, we want to talk more about growing up in foster care and some of the things that you went through and you learned to help shape you who you are today. We want to hear from you. What is the first memory that comes to mind when you hear the name Homer Blow? 833-212-1017. Do not touch that dial. It's your girl, Jazz Tyler. Oh. 101.7 The Truth. It's your girl, Jazz Tyler. We are live and direct. Be sure to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel, 101.7 The Truth. Follow us on social media, 101.7 The Truth, and tap in MKE. Shout out to the chat. Jasmine West says, hey, y'all, I remember Homer coming to my middle school MEC a few times in 97 to 99 DJing. Tamisha Gilbert says, great day, Homer and Jazz. Anita Nicole says, yes, Commander McGee saying Home of Blow is legendary. Shout out to Kawanda. Thank you so much for tuning in. Before we went to break, we were talking about Homer's life. He was sharing with us that at two, you stated there was a situation where your father unloaded his weapon onto your mother, and then you ended up having to go to a foster home.
Mm-hmm.
And you moved around at two to two different foster homes.
Correct.
And by the time you reached the third foster home, you had no relationship with your mother because
Correct.
You couldn't recollect who she was.
Nope.
How was that growing up emotionally on her and you?
Well, you know, for me, you know, when you I look at when people end up growing up and you get attached to who's showing you love.
Yes.
So, you know, I didn't get to feel the love of my mother, you know, before two, yeah, I'm sure I was, but I'm two now. And then to go through these two abusive physical abuse, like beating me,
yes.
Like I say, no sexual abuse, but to go through that, I'm like, okay, this woman can't love me. Yes. That woman can't love me. So the third foster home is where I stayed until I eventually ended up being able to go back home. So they would have, you know, caseworkers and social workers come over and say your mother is going to come by to visit you.
Mm-hmm.
And when she would come over, I'm like, they was like, she was like, come here. I'm like, mm-mm.
I don't know. You
stayed by my foster mother. And that happened like that for a long time.
Yeah.
And she would just, you know, break down crying. Talking about, you know, my baby don't love me. My baby don't love me. You know, I'm sorry. But it was nothing that she really had to apologize for.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You got shot. Yeah. You get what I'm saying? You weren't able to take care of all of us. So there were some that remained home. Because like I say, it was nine of us. But some were able to remain at home. And so because of that, as I got, you know, older growing up in the foster home, I'd say probably around eight, nine, you know, I started, you know, okay, hey, mama. You know yeah. what I'm saying? When she would come by, they kept asking if I wanted to go by for visitations for like on the weekends or whatnot.
Yeah.
Like, nope.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. This
ain't
happening. This enough.
Yeah.
It's enough right here. And then I eventually got to the age where I was like, okay, I'll go. But it was like two different worlds for me.
Yeah.
Like in my foster home, the final, you know, foster home that I was in, we didn't have roaches. We didn't have mice.
Yeah.
At my house, it was roaches.
Yeah.
It was mice.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
It was cover your food up before something get in it. Like, huh?
Yeah, I'm going
What you
home.
Mean? Yeah. Like, I ain't about that life.
Yeah.
I was not about that life.
Yeah.
We had a garden. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I done the little milk carton thing where you put your little bean in a wet napkin and then you potted it into the little carton and took it home proud. And we had a garden that I could plant it in.
Yes.
I planted me a sunflower seed stalk and it grew.
Yeah.
A corn stalk and it grew. I wasn't ready for 27th and Locust.
Come on now.
I wasn't ready for 27th and Locust. I was not ready. So, because I was on 14th and Keith then. And I was like, I ain't used to this.
Yeah.
Yelling and wondering what's for dinner and potluck, whatever you find in the pot, good luck. You get what I'm saying? So when I was in my foster home, I never had to eat sugar sandwiches and syrup sandwiches and stuff like that. When I got home, that's when I got introduced to ramen noodles, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I wasn't used to that. And that's my bowl and all that kind of stuff. People writing their name on stuff. Like, what? Yeah. You know, because I'm like next to the baby boy. So
right.
I'm like, everybody else is older than me.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And so it just ended up, you know, just making me appreciative of the things that you have.
Yes.
And feeling like I need to make sure that other children that may grow up in those kind of situations to know that you don't have to become a statistic.
Mm-hmm.
In school, always, you know, of course it was C's first, and then you got to where you can get A's and stuff like that. But I was always like ahead of the class. I was my reading level, even when I was in elementary school, they were like, you read on a 12th grade level.
Yeah.
So, and then of course, as I continued to excel in grades, it's like, you read on a college level.
Yeah.
So, you know, I did my homework in foster home and all that. At home, it was kind of optional. So I'm like, I'm not used to this. I'm up on time. I'm going to school.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but then I had brothers that were into music, which ended up taking me to the DJ realm of it. And so, but I would always get in trouble because after I ended up coming home because my foster mother passed away from cancer.
Okay.
And I'll never forget when they were taking her out. And, you know, she would frequently. Let's see, at that time, I want to say maybe about 11 or 12.
So it's another tragic
event
at a young age.
Mm-hmm. So then it was like, okay, well, what are we going to do with him? You know, so her sister was like, you know, I can take him. I can take him. Because I still wasn't ready to go home.
Yeah.
So I go and visit. But, yeah, like, time to go home. I'm
like
there.
That movie Joe's Apartment.
Yeah, absolutely. She here yet to pick me up? Take me home. So, yeah, it was like that. But then, you know, I had brothers that DJed and whatnot. And so because of that, I would go down to the basement on 27th Street, 27th and Locust, and I'd go in the basement and sneak on the equipment and start trying to DJ. And, of course, they would get me in trouble, so I'd get a whooping. And I was like, this ain't cool.
Yeah.
This ain't cool. So my mother ended up, they had a color time then. You know, I didn't got Rent-A-Center. Rent-A-Center came out, too, around that.
Got
but
you.
It was one called
Color
Time.
I'm like, what is Color Time?
Yeah, it was like the Rent-A-Center. So, you know, we had one of them big old TVs that had the turntable and the 8-track things in it. And it was the TV, too. And then sometimes you had the stuff stacked on it that didn't work. Only one of the things worked. And then the aluminum for the antenna and the stick of the fork and the butter knife, all that kind of stuff. So I got in trouble so much sneaking down the basement, getting on my brother's DJ equipment, that she ended up renting me something from, then it turned to like Rent-A-Center. It was like Sansui. I'm like, here, it had a turntable, and I worked with it. I used to make my cassette tapes. I hated when the DJs would end up saying, you're listening to WNOVVV. I'm like, y'all done messed up my tape. Y'all done messed up my damn tape. And so a guilty pleasure of mine is when I got to WNOV, a guilty pleasure of mine. And I'm sorry, people, it happened. And if it happened to you, it's okay. I knew that people were doing the same thing that I was doing when I was younger, trying to, you know, record off the radio. And so just when I know I'm playing the hits, I just come in, WNOV, instant replay. I'm like,
you ain't taking mine.
I messed all they tapes up. I did it on purpose.
Gosh.
I did it intentionally.
I know that's right. So was this your mom who bought it or your
My mother. I was at home. That's how I was able to go down in the basement there and get on the equipment or whatnot when he wasn't there.
Yeah.
But when he'd come, be like, yeah, what? And he cussed me out and all that. And I'm like, all right. I'm going to tell mama. Of course, I got disciplined. And it's like, okay. But I still did it
because
I had a liking for it.
So
and
she's like, it's something. And it's something to this.
It is. And so it worked out so well for me that, you know, I learned how to DJ with that one turntable. So then I started going down and I had my one turntable.
Yeah.
And then I had a realistic mixer from Radio Shack. I was like, uh-oh.
It's a wrap.
Yeah. I'm DJing now. Yeah. I got me some headphones.
What was your first DJ name?
It was always
Homer Blah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's my
phases.
Government name.
Yeah.
Like, you know, some people think it's a stage name.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's really my government name. And I'll show you. I want people to end up having to see everything on the air or whatnot. But, I'll end up showing you that you can end up literally. I know you may not be able to see it. Yeah, you feel what I'm saying?
So,
Blow is my middle name, but it's really Homer Blow.
Yes. So you are authentic to the T because so many people go through
stage names.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Homer Blow is Homer Blow. It ain't no Homer Blow outside of Homer Blow.
Right.
It's just Homer Blow. That's it.
Right. And when I show it to Curtis Blow, he'd be like, you know what I'm saying? You really are.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yep.
So your family played a huge part in you becoming in the entertainment business. Mm-hmm. You were around it from them. When we come back from break, let's tap more into how that felt, how you grew into the entertainment business, and then also let's tap into your years at Washington High School. And
yeah, I was going to say, yeah, lunchroom. Boy, I was
going
DJ.
Down.
That part.
We got Homer blowing the builder. Do not touch that dial. It's your girl, Jazz Tyler, 101.7 The Truth. It's your girl, Jazz Tyler. We are live and direct, and we have my favorite in the building, legendary Homer Blow is here, Milwaukee. Homer, thank you so much for tapping in with us. We've gotten to know a lot of bit more about you, some of the things that you've been through. Before we went to break, we were talking about the how you used to get whoopings for playing on your brother's DJ. Until your mama said, you know what? He must want this so bad.
Yeah, I'm going to get him his own.
I'm going to get him his own. And not only, it didn't stop there. You took what you learned from home and you implemented it in school when you attended Washington High School.
Pergolder. So
let's tap into that, from school announcements to all of the above. What was your years like at Washington, and what were some of the clubs and teams that you were a part of?
Washington High School, again, proud Pergolder. And when I got to Washington, because, you know, I had to, like, change schools, you know, going from the foster home to being black at home. And so I went to Clark Street Elementary, and then I ended up going to, which one was it? Was it, I don't think it was Pulaski. Might have been Audubon.
Okay.
Audubon. So then I went to Audubon, and then I went to Washington High School. And when they would hear me be able to speak in my dictation, it was like, okay, you want to do the announcement?
Yeah.
You want to try doing an announcement? So I'm in there hitting a little xylophone.
And for the youth that's listening, back then we used to actually have school announcements over the intercom.
Yeah, every classroom had to hear me. They had to hear me. Like, and just going over what's going on that day. Good morning, Washington High School. Here are today's announcements, telling everybody, and it was always clear. And also, this will be going on, and to Miss such and such class is going on a field trip today. Enjoy yourselves on your field trip to wherever they was going. And then I hit the little black words, doom, doom, doom. And that was it. Those were the announcements. But I spoke so clearly, and they were able to understand my pronunciation and enunciation of words, that they then said, look, you know, you're going to be the one doing all of our speakers and guests that we have that come to the auditorium, and they have all the classrooms come to the auditorium. Yeah. So I was doing that. And then they had this talent show, right? And again, Curtis Blow, Homer Blow.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to do Christmas rapping. And, you know, I never, you know, been to high school. So I in there, and I ended up, Mr. Kurtz was the teacher at the time. He taught, like, drama and all of that kind of stuff. So I ended up saying, look, I see y'all got these Christmas decorations, right? And it wasn't even Christmas time. I said, y'all got all these Christmas decorations. I said, I want to use that fireplace, and I want to put, like, a stocking on it.
Yeah.
And I want to have it lit up from the black. You know, I know it can't be a fire.
Yeah.
But I'm going to come through it. And I had him do the announcement, like, if you know Christmas rapping by Curtis Blow, it says, 'Twas the night before Christmas.
Yeah.
And he'd be like, hold it, wait a minute. I did that part.
Yeah.
But he had to do that part. And when he done it, and, you know, I had, like, lights going around the fireplace or whatnot, and I had on a Santa Claus suit. And nobody, again, I was new to Washington High School, so it was like, people didn't really know me, because, you know, I was like, oh, who's the new kid?
Yeah.
And so I ended up saying, I'm going to win this talent show.
Yeah.
And people were like, ain't nobody know him. So it was all kind of other people coming out, and then it was time for me. I said, turn out all the lights.
Yeah.
So they could see this. And I said, I pointed to him, because I could see him, black stage on the side of the stage.
Yeah.
And I was like, go ahead and read your part. It's the night before Christmas. And all through, hold it now, hold. That's when I came out.
Yeah.
I said, that's played out. I climbed from the fireplace and start doing the gigolo. Like, don't you give me all that jive about things you heard, you know, because this ain't 1983, you know. So I done it, and people start running black into the auditorium.
Yeah.
They were standing all on the chairs, the seats and stuff. They was like, and I won it. I tripled the amount of votes that the person that came in second place
yes,
had.
Come on now.
And then all of a sudden, they're like, okay, and you DJ? I said, yeah, I like to try to DJ. Yeah. So I ended up getting a chance. Mr. Boom.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Boom used to DJ the lunchroom dances and some of the dances, period. So he gave me that opportunity, and the rest was history. I became the Washington High School lunchtime DJ.
Come on,
had
now.
Us jamming.
Legendary.
But yeah, yeah. So we was jamming in the lunchroom, and a lot of people come up, man, I remember you was turning Washington High School lunchroom out. Yep, yep. People that could have went outside, because that's when you could go outside for recess.
Yeah, right.
They stayed in because they knew that I was going to be DJing.
Were you making cassette tapes and
absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Mixtapes.
Yep, absolutely. Breaking them little, you know, things out, but then you got to put the little tissue in it or the tape on it so you could record over it.
Yeah.
I was doing all that. Learning. I was a master at hitting that pause button and doing this and doing that and making remixes on cassette tapes at that time. So, yeah, I did all of that. Again, had a chance to, again, because I was a teen, I was sneaking in these different clubs, so I got a chance to actually DJ at this one bar. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right. When I started DJing at People's Lounge, for people who know me from People's Lounge, I was underage.
And so, I had no business,
but I ain't drink.
Yeah.
So I wasn't trying to drink no alcohol, but I was in that DJ booth doing my thing.
Yes.
And I ended up, it wasn't on purpose, taking two of their regular house DJs' jobs. And so they had me there just like every night that they were doing DJs.
Yeah.
I was there. I was the DJ. And I'd done that for years. And also, when that ended up happening, I tell people, people be like, my great-grandmama says she was partying with you. I try to remind people that when I was DJing at People's Lounge, your mothers and your fathers may have been 25, 30, 40, 50 years old, 60 even.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, it seems like, how old are you? But it's like, if you really think about the fact, and it's just like people that came to my first birthday party for the kids 32 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The party has always been for kids 2 to 13 years old. But for the first 15 to 16 years, I'd done two parties. It was the Homer Blow birthday party for the kids, always from 2 to 6 p.m.
Uh-huh.
Then we would flip everything, and then from 7 to 10,
it was the grown-up
teenagers,
okay,
14 to 17.
Got you.
Yeah, so now just imagine the person that was 17 at the first Homer Blow birthday party for the teens.
Yes.
How they are. And that's why you see, like, people say, I bring my kids now.
Yeah.
I bring my grandkids now. Because, you know, when you think about the ages and even think of the ages of the parents that were bringing their kids.
Yes.
So, you know, so it was, you know, everything just flowed. And one thing that I can say that I'm also proud of that a lot of people can't say, I didn't have a downtime in my career.
Yeah.
It just continued to excel.
Yeah.
And DJing in clubs and lounges. And it's not a bragging moment. It's just the truth.
Yes.
Since 1988 to 89, and again, remember, I was DJing in clubs before I was grown.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had to ask to DJ a club or any event.
Yeah.
So any event or club that you grew up here in Homer Blow at, I never went to those clubs and say, hey, man, let me get one of your nights.
Yeah.
I didn't have to do that.
That's right.
By like 88, 89. So, and to this date. So everywhere that you hear me at, if Homer Blow going to be at Mr. B's or whatever, they hire me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm going to be hosting concerts, they hire me. So I don't get into all of that DJ undercutting and all of that.
Yeah.
If you want Homer Blow,
you
know, you called me. This is my price.
That's it.
If I get to stay home, I get to stay home.
That's right. So you joined some clubs while at Washington High School as well.
Yeah. You know, I done a lot. I've been I've been blessed to be received and to be received by my peers.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Then, like, even with the basketball teams at Washington, the girls and the boys, they always like, nah, Blow, you coming to our game.
Yeah.
So I had to get from bus to bus and go, and then even got to announce the games, be an announcer
yes.
for the games. They're like, nah, we got our person.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it was all an experience that just continued to help build who I am today. And I always like trying to help people. Even,
yeah.
you know, coming up, I was like, oh, here, sharing. You know, I took that real serious. We're like, what did we learn today?
Yeah.
Sharing.
It's scary.
Yeah, so I'm sharing. You know, I shared even my lunch food, right? But unless it had, like, the brownies or certain cookies or the lasagna or the mock chicken legs.
It's a wrap.
Yeah, it's a wrap then because I was one of those ones. So if you were one of the victims of me, you know, it happened. I did it on purpose. But I'd be like, I'd go to somebody's plate.
Yeah.
Be like, you ain't going to eat that, are you? You know, put your finger
in it.
Right in it.
If you are a victim,
you ain't getting ready to eat this peanut butter bar, are you? No, take it, Homer.
You can have it.
Yeah.
Did you lick your finger first?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't go that far. I didn't go that far. I didn't put my DNA in it. I put my fingerprint in it.
Listen,
though.
Well, I would have been mad, especially with those peanut butter bars. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
There was certain lunch food that was like, it was going down.
Yes.
I need to get another chip.
Yes.
Give me another token. I need to get this. So, yeah. But, and so the clubs again, always packing clubs. And I know we're up on a break, but yeah, packing the clubs. And I'll tell you just, some of the plethora of clubs and lounges and bars that I've been at, it's been a blessing.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. We got Homer Blow in the building. What's the first memory that comes to your mind when you hear the word, the name Homer Blow? We want to hear from you, 833-212-1017. We got to go to break to pay some bills. Do not touch that dial. It's your girl, Jazz Tyler.